In the name of one God, Holy Trinity, Amen. One of my favorite things about a full church on these full church days like Christmas and Easter is watching your children crawl all over you and put the bulletins in their mouths. And I just want you to know, if you're a parent and you have a squirming child and they're making any noise, just relax. We are all cool with that here. There is nothing better than the sounds of a baby, and I think they're so demonstrative of how we might exist in the world, whether we're cooing from excitement or we're crying because we have some need that needs to be met by our other. I feel like on these days when the church is packed, like Christmas and Easter, when it comes to these really familiar stories, I feel like I'm always looking for a way in, you know, something that is different and can catch my attention and your attention. These stories are so familiar, and I can tell you that the narrative itself, the biblical narrative, never fails to provide some nugget, some point, some angle, some little grouping of words. And there are these familiar beats of the story, and it seems like everyone knows them, though I suppose we can't always rely on that. But even if you've never been to church in your entire life, it is likely that you have some sense of the apex moment of the Christian story that is told at Easter. Jesus, betrayed by his own people, goes down to his beating and death on a cross, and 3 days later, he rises from the dead. We know those familiar beats of the story. What I think we might lose track of from time to time is the details of the story, and the details in the different accounts of the story, too. They're quite different, and I would say their differences are even more striking when we take into account that we really don't talk about that very much. We don't talk about these very different Easter stories that happen in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Easter in the Bible never ends with eggs and baskets and seersucker. And depending upon which version of the Easter story you read, it can even be scary. We certainly don't celebrate the frightening side of Easter in our church, or probably in any church, because the message itself is legitimately and profoundly hopeful. And it is a truly weird story. One of those details struck me as I was reading over this version of the story that we have from John's Gospel this morning. I've probably read it 1,000 times. It comes right up there at the beginning of John's account, right there in the first sentence. The story's talking about women, Jesus's female disciples. The women Jesus was close to making their way to the tomb, they are the first on the scene. The women are more present to the needs of Jesus, both in his life and his death, than the men. That's just the way it goes. We may not tell the story that way from the pulpit, but it is the way that the story reads in the Bible. The work that they have in front of them on this morning is to prepare Jesus' body for burial. His body would have to be washed and anointed and wrapped. And it would have happened sooner if not for the Sabbath beginning on Friday at sundown. And very likely, if that Sabbath hadn't been a particularly important Sabbath, the one before the Passover, his body probably would have been prepared. But it wasn't. It was entombed and it was left to be prepared later on. They would come back to do that, and they do. That's what they're doing, is John's Easter story opens up, and that's where this phrase just jumped out at me. The story reads, "While it was still dark." While it was still dark. It says, early on the first day of the week, while it was still dark, Mary Magdalene came to the tomb and saw that the stone had been removed from the tomb. It's those five words that stick out for me, though. While it was still dark. And bear with me for a moment here. I do realize that these five words are not the point of Easter. I get it, but these are the ones that are making an impression on me this year. While it was still dark, I read those words again and they just jumped off the page. And I thought, well, isn't that the truth? While it was still dark, isn't that just the way it goes? And I would just say, if you know me, you have some sense that I'm pretty intent upon living this thing out, this life of faith, this God love life, as I like to call it, this love spreading, difference making life that followers of Jesus are called into. And if you don't know me, then I just say, well, I'm here. I'm a priest. I'm preaching on Easter Sunday morning in one of the greatest Episcopal parishes in the country, and that in itself should give you some small indication that I am serious about this life of faith. And I was thinking about those five words as they relate to living a life of faith, as they relate to following Jesus, however you want to say it. While it was still dark, it seems pretty descriptive to me. It seems pretty true, pretty real. While it was still dark, it seems to me that most times, maybe not all times, but most times, the vast majority of the time, that I feel that God makes a demand on my life, that God is asking something of us, that most times when we begin a new thing, one that we have a hunch might be grounded in God, who we know to be love, when we start something new, that's loving or faithful, we do it while it's still dark. There's an obscurity to faith practice that's nearly always present, at least in the very beginning. Faith and certainty, though they've been smushed together by the Enlightenment, faith and certainty just never seem to cohabitate very well for me, at least in my life and my experience. When we're moving out towards something good and something deep, something meaningful, something profound and loving and beautiful and creative and generative, you know, there might be a few breadcrumbs, but there is just never a road. A life with God, a life of love, requires courage. Maybe courage more than anything else. At least courage first. We're almost always asked to move toward the good without knowing whether we'll make it, or if we're on the right path, or if in the end we end up as well off as we were when we started. While it was still dark, there's this felt experience of faith that's scary. Really. And to really live it takes so much practice. So much practice and so much courage. It's worth it, of course. It's worth it. It's worth it. Every time, it's worth it. But I think it's just really important for us to have some transparency on what it is and what it feels like. It doesn't always feel like baskets and eggs and seersucker. A lot of the times it feels scary. Maybe it's an energizing scary, but it is scary nevertheless. Maybe you found yourself at some point in your life thinking about this stuff. Faith and God and love and goodness and beauty. And then you didn't feel so great. Maybe it's not how a Christian friend or relative or coworker described what it should be, would be like for you. Maybe you felt like you just needed a little bit more from God, or just a little bit more, and then someone admonished you that you just need to have faith and everything would be okay. If that is true for you, if that has ever been true for you, if that's true for you now, or that was true for you, or you expect it might be true for you in the future in light of Easter and all of its beauty, here's what I would tell you in light of while it was still dark, and in light of how those early disciples operated and left for us a trail of breadcrumbs. Here's what I would tell you. If you ever feel anxious or scared at any level, a lot or a little, if you don't exactly know how to live this life of love, if you'd like to make a love-spreading difference in your life, in the life of your family, in the life of your community, but you just don't know where to start, here's what I would tell you. If you see the faith that other people seem to have, and you don't feel like you have it, here's what I would tell you. If you maybe feel frustrated and confused, that you're trying, but you just don't seem to be going anywhere, here's what I would tell you. If you are feeling sad, grief-stricken, or depressed, here's what I would tell you. If you are feeling any or all of those things in big ways or small ways, I would tell you there's nothing wrong with you. 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 Nothing. There's nothing wrong with any of you, no matter what others might tell you, or even harder, what you might tell yourself. There is nothing wrong with you. You are loved yesterday, today, and every day. You were built for it. You are embodying it. Even if your own self-talk tells you something different, there is nothing wrong with you. Nothing. You are loved just as you are, right here, right now. And hey, if you're grinning from ear to ear and you're killing it and life is at its highest peak, there is nothing wrong with you either. In the dark, in the fear, in the anxiety, in the confusion, in the depression, in the dark, you are still made of what you are made of. God makes things in love and with love. And that is what this story is about. Love is the very substance of our being. There is nothing wrong with you. How could there be? Happy Easter. Amen.